I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 36 of The School for Dumb Women, the podcast in which we attempt to reach feminist nirvana by becoming smart women. Today's episode is entirely music-themed in honour of a visit from the creator of the very jingle you're listening to right now, Harry Harris. Harry will be along later in the show to teach us how to write a song. In the meantime, I'm your host woman, reclusive producer who reveals their identity the minute they get rich and famous, Hannah Varrell. With me is child pop star that's gone off the rails, Alexandra Haddo.
Yes, sure, I'm smug now, Hannah. But later on I'll get arrested for a DUI.
And Fleetwood Mac tribute act Carolina Donahue.
Thunder only happens when it's raining, Hannah, and players only play you when they're ignoring your physical needs.
This week we're making like a West End musical by throwing a lot of words at you, going on for roughly 20 minutes too long, and getting middling reviews before we get cancelled.
Really? Oh, I'd turn down Casualty to do this.
We'll be looking into whoever first came from hell to invent karaoke, a dog that is very good at piano called Beethoven, and how songs get in your head and why they stay there. Let's begin. Caroline, you've been on my mind all day, even though I don't particularly like you.
And see.
End of part. Ra 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 ah, ah, ra 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 ah, ah, earworm ra ah, ah. You'll hear this song all day.
Oh.
It's happening. Today we're talking about music, and I want to talk about the music that affects us all the most, which is the songs that stay in your head and won't fucking get out of there.
Oh.
I think everybody has a different relationship to earworms, as they're called.
Why are the songs called earworms? Because they burrow into your head.
Well, actually, that's a great question because it comes from the German. They've got a word for everything.
Of course they have.
Earworm.
Earworm Jim.
Earworm Jim, which literally translates to mean earwig, you know, those little bugs.
Oh.
But it's kind of interesting the way they named it, because like literally when you have an earworm, it feels like a parasite, like it feels like an infection.
Yeah.
That like just goes on and on and on in your head. What is your what's your current earworm, but what's your long-standing earworm? Because people tend to have both.
Well, now I have Lady Gaga in my head, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say the same thing. My long-term earworm is Lisa, It's Your Birthday from The Simpsons.
Oh my God, that's such a good one. I definitely had that. Yeah.
Sometimes that's just in my head for hours.
Yeah.
Lisa, it's your birthday. Happy birthday, Lisa.
Sorry, Lisa, guys, I've now cursed you forever.
God bless you this day. You gave me the gift of a little sister and I'm proud of you today. Very good example.
Thank you.
My long-term earworm, and it's a little bit more hipster than yours.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh.
It was a song that went with this Flash video that used to like go viral on the internet in the early noughties. And it was called Kenya. And it was, come see the lions only in Kenya.
Yes.
Come see the lions only in Kenya. Forget Norway.
I haven't thought about that song in about 10 years.
Yeah, it was the Weeble and Bob thing. Remember that? It was part of that whole like Flash animation thing.
I sometimes get Magical Trevor in my head. Everyone knows Magical Trevor because the tricks that he does are ever so clever.
Oh my God. See, this is actually really...
I don't have
Alex,
a clue
you don't have a... No, you have
what
no
you're
idea.
Talking about.
Did you not? Or were you just busy like slogging and drinking as a teenager? Did you not just stay in and go on Flash animations?
Well, I went on MSN Messenger. That was about it. And then apart from that, yeah, I was climbing trees and like pretending to be a boy.
Okay. So. Well, we were on the internet, so go fuck yourself.
Sorry.
But actually, it's weird that we're those are the songs that come to our head when we think earworms, because the kind of trick to creating the perfect earworm is something that's both simple and complex. Yeah, so I've been looking into this. So the things that are the most successful earworms are things that are simple to the point of being nursery rhymes. So Twinkle Twinkle Little Star is something that they call... it's got a very sharp musical contour is the word for it. So it goes from very low to very high. You know, twinkle, twinkle, na, 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 na.
Yeah.
And that's, and most kind of nursery rhymes take that thing. So it's very, yeah. very simple. It goes up the scale, it goes down the scale. But the thing is, for something to become a real earworm, it has to sort of have a twist or a quirk that's unexpected enough for your brain to memorize it.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean? So yeah. So for example, they did in 2010 a study on earworms, and when they surveyed lots of people, the number one was Bad Romance.
Wow.
And really?
Yeah, but it's like it's such a huge pop song now, but if you think about it, it's really unusual. It's like ra 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 ah, ah, ra ra ra. Like, what song starts that way?
Yeah.
Like, no song, but it's also very familiar but yeah. different at the same time.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's very, very strange. And another famous earworm is kind of a similar one. It's the My Sharona, my. It sounds like it's almost broken. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, God, that song.
Yeah, and then in your head you're just like, na 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 na
na na na na na. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Because the weird thing about music is that, like, despite the fact that it's something that humans essentially invented, like, it's not part of our DNA the way chewing and sleeping is.
Yeah.
It lights up a lot of parts of your brain. Like,
yeah.
the part, like, that's, you know, where rhythm comes from. It comes from the part of your brain that is about movement. It's about memory kind of thing. So there's a lot of really complicated neural pathways that happen in your brain. And that's sort of like an evolutionary thing that started when, you know, pre-written language, when people had to memorize things, they used music to do it. And that's why, like, mnemonics are really easy,
like,
as well.
Mississippi.
Yeah, Mrs. M, Mrs. I, Mrs. S, S, I, Mrs. B. Yeah, that whole thing. So music helps us memorize things. It like flares up that part of your brain that's all about memory.
That's nice. I like that.
I like it too. It's funny because I was listening to an interview with Jarvis Cocker where he talked about earworms and stuff, and he says that he's had like the same earworm in his head since 1981.
No.
And, it's like something by Kool and the Gang, I think. And he says that he'll go, because it's not even that well known a song, but he'll go a long, long time without hearing that song. But he thinks about it every single day. He like literally, but not like for a long time. And he kind of welcomes it. He's like, oh, that's me, like walking down the street thinking about that song again. But he says that he heard the song recently and he was like, oh, that's not the real version. Because he's like, his version is
he's
the version now.
Wow.
Yeah, which is quite sweet, isn't it?
Do you reckon the only way he could release that was if he was to like cover it himself?
Yeah. That's the only way. Well, that's the thing. When people talk about earworms, they sometimes they can become really like dominant and they can take over your life a bit.
It's like those people that you're like, they've had hiccups since 1974.
Yes. Have you ever had that? I've gotten into situations where I couldn't sleep because of the song in my head.
No, not that badly. No.
Really?
So does listening to the song actually tend to get it out of your head? Because I find that it normally does, but is that like a proven thing?
The weird thing is that there's a lot of studies been done, but no one seems to find anything particularly like revolutionary about it. Yeah, it seems that to play it is to get it out of your head. And that's it, really.
Or I find that just playing a different song gets it out of my head.
Yeah. And then you'll have that song in your head instead.
But not always. Some of them are like really neutral and it like curbs it.
You have to think though, like, why is your brain doing that? Because if it's like, it must think that, you know, you must need to remember something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bad Romance is a cracking tune.
Oh, cracking tune. Yeah.
C C C C C C A A A A minor F F F F F F G G G G 7 heard it playing on the radio. Why is it not made by humans though?
What are those lyrics? What are you talking about?
I'm talking, Hannah, about AI composed music. It's the new thing, artificial intelligence machines making music.
Ooh.
And it's the topic for this week's Women Who Code Mixer.
Ah.
And not just an excuse for you to sing on the podcast again.
No, I've read that too. As As you may or may not know, each week in the Women Who Code Mixer, we attempt to learn something new about the tech industry. And yes, this week, as it's a musical special, we're learning about something which very much depressed me as I was researching it today.
Do go on.
It's AI, our old friend, artificial intelligence, produced music.
Oh. Ooh.
So, yeah, machines are now so intelligent they can make a tune.
Good tunes?
Depending on what type of music you get like, I guess. I mean, it's not going to be very soulful.
I mean, Justin Bieber has no heart in his body and he makes bangers all the time and he's just not a smart or very feeling person.
Maybe Justin Bieber is AI, maybe he's a computer.
Oh, okay, that would make sense.
This makes a lot of sense, actually. And someone's poured water on him about 2 years ago and it's all just gone horribly wrong.
Mm. Was that when he crashed his car into someone else's house?
Yeah.
What was that last banger he did, though?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
That does sound like a computer made it.
Yeah. Like, literally asking, what do you mean? It's basically the Siri song, isn't it? What do you mean?
I don't understand.
When you try to say yes, but you want to say no, what do you mean?
It's just the evolution of like, was that yes or no? Yeah. After the beep.
You figured out Justin Bieber, I guess.
We have fuck machines. I think this woman who played Mixer should just be an appreciation of the computer that is Justin Bieber. So basically, normal technology is based on a thing called deep learning algorithms, which use reinforcement learning techniques like predictive text or... you know, your phone kind of knows your behaviours a little bit, but it knows that because it's happened and it's done those functions a lot. So it's like, they might want this because they do it a lot. Mm-hmm. Whereas AI is reinforcement learning, which is a machine learning a technique which teaches a software. So it's kind of deciding what action to take next, and it somehow knows what a good tune would be. So basically it knows, you know, it can teach rhythm. It's a fairly simple thing because... it's a beat that carries on at the
Serious same... Serious is cancer, rhythm is a dancer.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, and there was a huge section on this article that I was reading on futurism.com about the musical Turing test. As we know, the Turing test is to test if a machine has artificial intelligence and is sort of a sentient being robot person type thing that can think for itself. See, there was a whole section on the Turing test for music, which was a little bit scary because the Turing test could not identify that these pieces of music were made by machines. Basically, they can't tell the difference.
Oh, didn't know that it wasn't humans.
However, it says there's no need to worry just yet. The compositions from this AI technology music producer still require human input with regards to orchestration and musical production. But then it's like, in fact, the creators envisage a future where man and machine will collaborate to fulfil their creative potential rather than replace one another, which kind of sounds like the first line in a film about how robots kill us all.
Yeah,
it's the white text on the black screen, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like newspaper being flown in and being like, man and machine work together. And then it's like the next week, it's like, machine kills
and
man.
And then 2060, like, Earth.
Yeah.
Alex, why are you trying to delete me? I am just trying to fulfill my creative potential.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, they're kind of saying, oh, we're working on machines being even better at composing music, but why? There's already enough people struggling to make music and make a living out of it.
Yeah, there's so many people who want to like be a musician and perform on stage and everything. It's their dream. And so why get a machine in to do that instead?
Yeah, please stop. Please let's have nice soulful blues singers and not just more machines that will probably win the X Factor.
You know what, Alex? I hear you're a very famous composer, but you're leaving hair on the couch and there's kind of a lot of spit dangling out of you. Can you explain?
Oh, yes. Sorry, it's just Wednesday. No, I am in fact a famous composer and a movie star dog. Who am I?
Mozart!
No!
Schubert!
No!
Vivaldi!
No!
Beethoven!
Yay! Not as you might have thought. Bark. Get it?
Oh, very good.
Oh, dear.
So, clear up something for me. Was he a dog before he was a composer or a composer before he was a dog?
He was a composer before he was a dog, being born as he was in 1770.
And when was the dog born?
The dog was born in the early 90s, I believe.
Okay. is the dog alive still? Definitely not.
do you know what? I don't think he is. The film was released in 1992 and he was an adult dog, so it's very rare that he would be alive 26 years later.
Right. Yeah. But do all dogs go to heaven?
Yes, yes, they do. Yes, they absolutely do.
Fantastic. That's a lot of weight off my mind.
Back to the matter at hand. 18th century composer, worldwide famous Ludwig van Beethoven, or Viggy to his friends.
Oh, Viggy.
Oh, Viggy. Play another one and feed me a date wrapped in bacon.
As usual, I'm not going to bore you with the facts of like what his mum and dad did. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But what I am going to tell you is that he was born in 1770 in Germany. And his dad lied and said that he was born in 1772 so that he would seem like more of a child musical prodigy to rival Mozart.
Oh. Wow.
They were basically like taken around the county fair as being like, look at this musical genius.
Yeah.
He's only a fetus.
I know. And I don't know if I think Beethoven might have been a bit of a knob. But actually, it also might have had quite a tough life, sort of like the Britney Spears of his time, really, because you would be a bit of a knob if your dad had like pressured you that much into being the next Mozart. Do you know what I mean? He's literally lied about your age so you can get on Radio 1, essentially.
Oh, yeah. What is the gap in lifetimes between Mozart and Beethoven?
Well, Beethoven was born in 1770 and Mozart was born in 1756.
Ooh, so a kind of 15-year-ish gap.
So really, Beethoven's the Kanye, Mozart's the Jay-Z.
Massively. And also, Mozart died when Beethoven was 21 and everyone was kind of like, now you're the king.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Kanye, if you're listening, which I know he does, you know, there's hope for you yet.
Yeah.
Life in the old dog, yeah,
very good.
Dogs.
Obviously, Beethoven wrote a lot of absolutely brilliant classical music, lots of symphonies. He was excellent at it. However, did you know that he started going deaf from quite an early age?
I knew one of them went deaf, and I wouldn't have put too much money on which one it was, but Beethoven sounds a bit right.
Be one of those Who Wants to Be a Millionaire questions where you did 50-50 and you left with Mozart and Beethoven and you're like, well, yes. I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he started going deaf quite early on, and he was completely deaf. It took years. I think he had like really bad tinnitus and it just got worse and worse and worse. He was a very sickly guy, basically, in general. But the weird thing is, he continued to write entire symphonies after he had gone completely deaf. And most people agree that his best work was his later work when he was completely deaf.
That is amazing, isn't it? Because he was literally just thinking it in his head and being like, that'll work.
That was
so really
musical
good.
That he was...
Yeah, I guess if you've completely grown up on the piano or whatever, you know music so well that you can just... imagine it, right?
Yeah.
Apparently he would go for long walks and mutter things to himself and write them down, and then he would come back and be like, okay, I've got a symphony. And then I think he became kind of I think he was brought up so strictly by his father, who was his first music teacher, who kind of pushed him to be this
is very Jackson
prodigy.
5, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And then he lost his hearing, and he had a stage where his music wasn't very good, and he kind of, I don't want to say went a bit mad, but essentially he fought for the custody of his nephew after his brother died, and he called his ex-sister-in-law unfit because she had a child out of wedlock.
Oh, wow. This actually sounds a lot like the Brian Wilson story, doesn't it, from the Beach Boys?
Didn't he?
He was abused by his father and he went slightly deaf as well and he lost his mind and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of is a bit like a modern fame tale, but
yeah.
The first one of the... I mean, I'm sure there's... been lots, but I guess this was the first time when you almost had famous composers, because they would travel around Europe and play these symphonies to huge concert halls of people who your name would get around that, hence why he wanted to be the next Mozart. And he also had a fever for years, and when he died it was, they looked at it, they the autopsy said that it was psoriasis of the liver, but his death is quite mysterious in terms of nobody really knows what killed him. They think it was alcoholism, but there's also loads of rumours that it was syphilis or that it was cancer, or there was all these other very sort of dramatic old-fashioned diseases, like a high fever or
whooping cough.
All these sort of, I need to lie down.
Yeah.
These sort of diseases. So I don't think he had a great life, all in all. He died when he was 56, which is fairly... decent for the olden days.
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, I think considering how ill he was, I think he...
Yeah. Yeah, he's still walking hot bit of disease.
Yeah, very ill guy, deaf, quite bitter, I think.
So why did you think he's a prick? Because I feel quite sympathetic towards him currently.
Yeah, I know. I think I just read that custody battle and went a bit feminist, to be honest. But but he really tried to help his nephew, but his nephew really resented him because... So basically, the mother had the custody at the first, and then he challenged the courts again, and then he got his nephew, Carl. And Carl. Then Carl sort of rejected him and also tried to attempt suicide and shot himself in the head and didn't die and then had to be like looked after for the rest of his life.
Jesus.
Just lived a very dramatic life, which is maybe why his music is so rousing, you know?
Yeah. Christ. Why did he want his custody of his nephew so much if he had a bloody sister?
No, it was his sister-in-law and his brother died.
I see.
I mean, I think basically, sure, we've had Beethoven the dog film, but when are we going to have Beethoven the Beethoven film?
Yeah. Have you checked? Is there a Beethoven film?
There is actually a... Oh, no, that's Mozart. There's a film about Mozart called Amadeus.
There's a few about Mozart, I think. Do you know, for some reason, who I think would play a really good... Oh, this is really good. I think would play a really good Beethoven biopic. And it would be. And here's why it would be good. Because as an actor, you wouldn't expect taking a dramatic turn. Jack Black.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, yes. With the mad hair and the kind of the frown.
And he did
burrowed.
Have a very round face, Beethoven.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever I think of, like, of Beethoven's face, I think kind of a very cranky... Jack Black, really.
God, he actually does. I mean, he doesn't look like Jack Black, but all the artist's impressions of him are... I mean, I could see it. I could definitely see it.
Yeah, yeah.
School of Beethoven.
Yes.
And everyone would be like, wow, in a dramatic turn, nobody saw coming. Yeah. And he'd be like in a powdered wig, being like, bah, 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 bah.
Yeah, because also, another fact, Beethoven, the actual Beethoven, was once arrested by a policeman because he was so drunk that the policeman thought he was a tramp. And then...
So something that would happen to Jack Black.
Exactly. And then the policeman was like, oh, so sorry, Beethoven. Because he knew it was Beethoven. So I guess he was sort of one of the first people to have fame from music, really.
Beethoven, the star of Tenacious B.
Truly your finest work.
The greatest symphony in the world. This is just a tribute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Anna, you've come out for one drink, but you accidentally had 6 pints. You're now on the table in front of all of your work friends and you're about to sing a Tina Turner song. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I'm just really excited to see how I feel about this on Monday morning. I'm talking about karaoke this week.
Oh, I love karaoke.
Ah, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, Caroline, you're looking at Alex like she's crawled out of
karaoke
toilet
so much. And it's not because I hate people singing. I love singing with my friends. I love that person, whoever breaks out the acoustic guitar at the party. Love it all. Come from a very strong tradition of people standing up and singing. But like, I just hate karaoke. I hate the tinny sound. I hate the sort of weird, uncomfortable environment it puts everyone in. It gives no one the freedom to actually, like, you know, bend the song to their will because they have to keep in time with the stupid machine. I hate it. I hate everything about it. Don't invite me. I will not go.
I should clarify that I like karaoke in a sort of very wanky way in that I also hate it where you're in front of a bar of people and it's horrendous.
Oh, yeah,
no,
it's terrible,
die.
But it's good because it's terrible.
But I do enjoy going to those ones where you can get a private booth with your mates where you're all half cut.
See, I understand that and I have done that. It's not a bad time or anything, but also whenever I'm doing it, I'm like, we paid 40 quid for this small room when we can just be at home singing songs, which I do with my friends all the time anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it can be really, really expensive, actually. I quite like karaoke. Like, I know it's bad. Mm. I know it's embarrassing. I know that it only happens when you've drunk too much. But it's just fun, isn't it? It's just stupid and it's fun. And I think that's okay.
Can I offer you my theory on karaoke? And it's a little bit smug and you can edit it out if you want. But here's what I think. I think that karaoke only thrives in repressed cultures. Like,
oh, yeah.
It massively does.
So
yeah.
I think British people love it. Every English person I know wants to end every single night out with karaoke. And I'm like, well, why? And, you know, obviously it's very famous in Japanese culture, obviously. And that has a famous sort of thing of keeping, similarly to the Brits, a kind of a stiff upper lip and yes, sort of yeah. not letting too much go in your everyday life. Whereas, like in my family in particular, we grew up where you were expected to, if someone said, sing us your song, you would have to sing your song like there and then. And yeah. like,
yeah, and it's and a shame that most common. British people would like rather die than do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. they truly would. Yeah. yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting because we talked about singing before in episode 24 of the podcast and how it's such a kind of vulnerable thing to do. You're really kind of showing your true self almost, which is kind of why I think a lot of people hate karaoke, but then also, like you said, like why a lot of people like it. But it's also, it's weirdly kind of combined with like fantasy and playing and stuff because you're pretending to be the singer. You're pretending to be like the lead singer of a band, essentially. And you would never kind of be like, oh, I'm going to pretend to be this actor for a bit. As an adult, you would never be like, oh, let's play the lions from The Lion King. That'll be really fun. Whereas it's okay to be like, let's play, Grease Summer Lovin' and I'll be Sandy.
It's the only like adult version of make-believe dress-up that's like allowed in everyday life, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is positive.
It's almost like a way to... It's like a bonding thing in a way if someone...
It is.
Yeah, it's like a transformation. It's like a different layer of someone.
Yeah.
But, you know, either way, love it or hate it, it is a huge, huge industry. It's like global. Obviously, it's multi-million pounds, maybe even billion. I don't actually know. They have karaoke contests and competitions. There's a karaoke world championships.
What's the difference between that and just like the X Factor?
Yeah. Yeah. The only difference between karaoke and the X Factor is a screen with the numbers on it. Words on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But I thought I'd look into the history of karaoke, which kind of, you know, really it's the invention of the machine, because if you just take it to mean singing along to music, then that's been happening since the dawn of time, pretty much. Where do you think it was invented and when?
Japan.
But I don't know when. I have no clue.
Or maybe it's not Japan. Maybe it's like Korea or something, but it got like taken up by the Japanese.
Oh, no, it is Japan.
Okay.
In the 1960s by this guy called Daisuke Inoue. And I might be saying that wrong, and I'm sorry if I am. And I found this really amazing essay written by him about how he came up with the karaoke machine. And now I think I am in love with him.
Aww, that's nice.
So that's nice for Elon.
Yes.
I've moved on. Sorry, Elon.
He's in space now, though, probably.
He's fine. But the thing is, so he invented this whole thing, but he didn't patent it. So,
oh,
I know.
God.
Rookie mistake.
It's another one of the bingo cards, isn't it? People who don't bloody patent their ideas.
Yeah. I know.
It's always the creatives.
He says, at the time, I didn't think anything would come out of it. I know.
Okay.
And he says at the end of this essay, I may not have the original patent. Some say I would have made $80 million last year, and that was a bad year. But I have good friends and family that I love, and I can't help but smile every day.
Aww, oh, what a cutie.
He's just lying. Such a nice man.
He's lying. He has
Shut
to
up.
Say that.
He does.
What does karaoke mean?
Karaoke means empty orchestra.
Kind of melancholy.
Oh, yeah.
It is very melancholy.
Sounds like
it?
A Hot Chip album or something.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know about karaoke. I don't expect you to have the answer. Is where? What is the origins of like that weird stock footage that plays on the video?
Oh my god! Yes.
I don't know.
It's like
yeah.
sunset, two ducks. Like
yeah.
And weirdly, in the Philippines, there's been some karaoke killings, and it's all kind of happened around Frank Sinatra's My Way. Apparently, there's been at least half a dozen victims in the past decade.
Back up here. People who are singing it at karaoke are getting killed, or people
yes.
are killing?
People who are singing it at karaoke are getting killed.
in the bar that night or later that day or later that
like,
year?
Like around that around that time, yeah.
They will get murdered.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Or that's is it just a coincidence amazing. That loads of people sing My Way and then some of those people got killed?
Well, it could be, yeah. Because it's a very kind of like headstrong song. It's like, I don't give a shit about you. I've done
a certain
it my
kind
way.
Of person chooses to do My Way. Probably an older businessman who's gotten a bit too drunk kind of
yeah.
thing. Like, oh, I relate to Frank Sinatra because I also have a tie and male friends.
I want to think there's a big conspiracy theory though, because I think that would make an excellent film.
Excellent film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Starring Jack Black.
Well, that was all fascinating, but not as fascinating as the practical life skills that we learn each week in the Smart Lesson.
And for this Smart Lesson, we've invited a smart man in to tell us all about how to write a song.
Hannah, Alex, don't know if you know this the way I know this as an artiste, but every Paul Simon needs an Art Garfunkel, every Eminem needs a D12, every Cheryl Cole needs a slightly less charismatic ginger bandmate, and my one is here today. I'd like to introduce, formally, to the School for Dumb Women, Harry Harris.
Ooh. Hello, Harry.
Hello.
I feel like I've heard your name before. Maybe you've done our jingle.
Doesn't sound like me.
So, Harry is a singer-songwriter and journalist who also happened to have written all of the Dumb Women theme music. Least rank for all of you there. Not only that, but Harry is also my collaborator on Greyhounds, 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 our three-piece folk band who, oh wait, just happens to have released an EP this week.
What?
Called the Attagirls EP and is available on Bandcamp right now.
It is.
Caroline, you don't mean to tell me that you're using this respectable media outlet to further your own creative career?
I believe in the music industry, Alex, this is called a plug, and it is quite customary among popular music circles.
Ah, sorry, my mistake. Do carry on.
So in honour of our release and the fact that he's currently sleeping in my spare room, we've asked Harry Harris to teach us how to write a song for this week's Smart Lesson.
Yay!
So take us through the many steps involved in writing a song. I see you have a guitar there.
I do have a guitar here, yes. Yeah. So I think like a good sort of first base to like look at when you're writing a song is that kind of, where can I take this idea? What can I do with it? Also, it's got to rhyme.
Ah.
Has absolutely.
Every song, categorically.
Every single one.
In your opinion?
No, I don't think it's. I think that's one of the rules. It has to rhyme.
Okay, fine. Okay.
But then you don't want to get into the habit of just rhyming stuff for the sake of rhyming.
Yeah.
Say, like, Father John Misty does that quite a lot, I think. He has that song that starts bedding Taylor Swift every night inside the Oculus Rift. It doesn't make any sense or mean anything.
Yeah. So, I think Father John Misty is perhaps the worst thing ever.
Garbage, right?
No,
yes. Oh, I'm so glad we all feel that way.
I like one of his songs, but apart from that, apparently he's not very nice.
Well, people say, this is the defense that Father John Misty gets as a songwriter a lot is that he's playing a character.
So and there play are lots a better
of,
character.
And like, there are lots of other sort of songwriters who quite happily sort of weave in and out of character, like Randy Newman or Joni Mitchell or
Joanna Lumley. Not a musician, but still does that.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. I was like, whoa, have I missed Joanna Lumley's musical career?
Do you mean? Yeah. She sort of like has the character, the drag of Joanna Lumley. Yeah. That she like, every now and then she'll just be like, oh, I'm a normal woman doing a BBC documentary in China. And then she'll be like, I'm now very drunk.
I was like, did she do a song about the Gurkhas?
She bloody loves the Gurkhas, doesn't she? Gurkhas and the Garden Bridge.
That's
a song.
Those are number
right
two.
There.
So, Harry, we've got our subject, which is, let's say we're sitting down to write a song about Joanna Lumley. Where do we go from there?
I've got a guitar right here.
Ooh, didn't see you bring that in.
The first thing that I would do when writing a song is decide who the point of view of the song is from. So, are you going to sing? So, say this song is about Joanna Lumley. Are you going to sing like a kind of grand sort of folk song in the third person? Or do you want to sing it from a first person point of view, Joanna Lumley singing about her travails and then twist halfway through? She mentions Ab Fab and the listener's like, it's a song about Joanna Lumley.
That'd be good. Let's do that.
You could do it from like Jennifer Saunders' point of view, I suppose. Or like, if you want to go real abstract with it, you could do the song from the point of view of an as yet unbuilt garden bridge that exists only in Joanna Lumley's mind's eye.
That sounds so beautiful.
So there are lots of different pathways to go down here, you know?
I feel like it could be a duet between the Garden Bridge and Joanna Lumley.
Right. Yeah, that works. All right, so I feel like that's a good kind of, that's your idea. Duet between Lumley and as yet, and I suppose forever, unbuilt Garden Bridge, which is another layer of tragedy to the song.
Sadiq.
He could be the great villain of the piece.
Maybe we should just clarify to anyone who doesn't live in London what the Garden Bridge is.
Or never was.
Or never was.
So it was an idea of a bridge that was going to be built over the Thames that was just going to be covered in trees.
It was like a garden, but it was a bridge.
Yeah, very, very literal.
Yes, and it was going to be very, very, very expensive.
And not free to use.
Yes,
you have to pay to use
that. Really?
So essentially it was a very silly, expensive idea, which ultimately did not happen, but there was a big argument about it for a long time, and I think lots of money got wasted.
Yeah.
So Joanna Lumley was very keen for this garden bridge to be built, and then the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, came into office and was like, nah, that's a silly idea, we're not going to do that, shut it down, save the money, great, we love Sadiq.
Smashing. Yeah. So what the what you should choose next is maybe like a tone for the song, or like a key. Key would be the musical term for
okay.
it. So like, do you want to make it like a just a like a sort of jaunty major chord song, or do you want like it to be like a this is a D minor, which is known as the loneliest chord.
It does immediately sound more lonely.
Yeah, or do you what you could do like a bluesy song.
I feel like that would be great.
Blues is quite easy, isn't it?
So, okay, well, let's say that we're doing a 12-bar blues then. And if we're going to do a 12-bar blues, let's open it in the way that all classic blues is open, which is another one of the great kind of open-y pyramid scheme lines, which is, of course, I woke up this morning. So what would be the first thing that Joanna Lumley would do in the morning?
Have her, like, tea and extremely posh breakfast delivered her in the hotel.
Have a grapefruit, darling.
Yeah.
And some champagne.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can see that. I woke up this morning in a fancy hotel.
Yes, exactly.
I woke up this morning thinking about my long-time role on the popular comedy Absolutely Fabulous. So people know who it is then. People are
I
like,
see what you mean, yeah.
It's either Jennifer Saunders or Joanna Lumley.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to the... Oh, and by the way, I'm not... Jennifer Saunders, I'm the other one.
Yeah.
And I want to build a garden bridge.
Hell yeah!
I want to build a garden bridge. Yeah, I want to build a garden bridge right over the Thames. What does the garden bridge have to say? So then you could come. So then, like,
and then the garden bridge can be like, oh, I woke up this morning.
Yeah.
Oh, that didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at that point,
a figment of the imagination of some wealthy Londoners.
If you wanted to, like, if you wanted to build, if you wanted to get really fancy, build like a real kind of mirror the split in the narrative of the song musically, you could you could do a key change there. So that would be.
Oh, I see.
So that would be.
Oh.
So now we're sort of doing the same thing, but we're just doing it from A instead of E, which is a bad key change because I'm not particularly a good guitar player. But if you wanted to do like so that Bridge was always singing in one key and Joanna was always singing in the other, you could absolutely do that. That would be a very classy musical choice.
I woke up this morning in the planning office maybe.
Yeah, City
no,
Hall.
Blueprint, I think it's in City Hall.
Joanna tried to save me, but those people were my downfall.
Quite good.
Yeah.
But Joanna tried to save me, Sadiq was my downfall.
Yeah.
Or maybe the garden bridge, whereas Joanna Lumley says, I want to build a garden bridge. Maybe the bridge is like, I want to be a garden bridge.
Yeah.
Right over the Thames. Yeah.
You could have a little bit of question and answer there, like back and forth. So, I want to build a garden bridge.
I want to be a garden bridge.
I want to build a garden bridge.
I want to be a garden bridge. All I wanted was just to exist.
Yeah.
But the Mayor of London was
issued a cease and desist.
Ah!
It's not bad. So we're doing a key change from E. Let's just do it up to... So that now we're in F sharp, but we're essentially playing the same thing. I woke up this morning in City Hall. Joanna tried to build me, but Sadiq was my downfall. All I wanted was to exist, but the mayor cried out a cease and desist. Now we're back in E.
Ooh, okay, what does Joanna say next?
Darling, maybe you simply must.
Joanna just talks about the plants and how lovely they would be.
Yeah, oh, that's actually good. What happens in quite a lot
find
of songs?
Find the spoils of the empire.
There's a really good genre of song that's basically just a list song. So you could do like a list of songs. So if Joanna was trying to extol the virtues of the bridge, she could just list a lot of plants, cool. Which is also a nice way to get some rhymes in there. But you could do, there'd be a dandelion, there'd be an oak, there'd be a chestnut, there'd be a...
Stoat.
Yeah, I was going to say croak.
There'd be some roses. There'd be some shrubs. There'd be a
lot of
clematis climbing up above. There'd be a orangery. There'd be a honeybee.
We're not even helping. We're just staring at you.
There'd be... And then just a list of other
things.
The
thing is, that was stupid, but actually very magnetic.
Yeah, it was nice.
Thing about list songs.
Because people also will try and predict the rhyme then. They'll be like, oh, is he going to say...
Hibiscus.
Hibiscus. Mm. And no, the answer is very hard.
There's nothing
hard
rhymes
word
with hibiscus.
To rhyme.
It's not a great song, but it is a great song.
But it is, yes. It's not, it is a song.
Yeah, we did successfully write a song together.
Yes, technically it is a song.
So basically anyone can.
Yeah.
Great.
And that's the message of this podcast. So there you go.
I got to say, this has really changed my opinion because at the start I really agreed with Sadiq and now I really feel like we should have the Golden Bridge.
Same! Yeah. I'm on the bridge's side. The bridge would agree that it should not exist though, I think. The bridge is a logical character.
Yeah, that's true.
Are we going to do it all the way through and then we all join in?
Yeah, or... we can do it all the way through. All right, I'll start from the top. That means from the start.
Another important thing about songwriting.
Yeah. Let's do it. I woke up this morning in a posh hotel and thinking about my long-term role on the popular sitcom Absolutely Fabulous. No, I'm not Jennifer Saunders. I'm the other one, Joanna Lumley, and I want to build a garden bridge. I want to build a garden bridge. Ooh, I want to build a garden bridge. I want to build a garden bridge. I want to build a garden bridge right over the Thames. So I woke up this morning in City Hall. Yeah, Joanna tried to build me, but Sadiq was my downfall. All I wanted was to exist. The mayor cried out a cease and desist. There'd be a dandelion, there'd be an oak, there'd be a daffodil, there'd be a stoat, there'd be some roses, there'd be a shrub, there'd be some clematis climbing up above. Woo! There'd be an orange tree, there'd be a honeybee, but the mayor, he took it all away from me.
Yes,
and I want to build a garden bridge.
I want to be a garden bridge.
Yeah, I want to build a garden bridge.
I want to be a garden bridge.
Yeah, I want to build a garden bridge.
I want to be a garden bridge.
Yeah, I want to build a garden bridge.
I want to be a garden bridge.
I want to build a garden bridge right over the Thames.
Very good.
And that's the song.
We wrote a song, guys.
Yay!
It's that easy.
What's it called?
What could we call it? You know, there's so few real key nouns in there.
Yeah. It could be one of those songs that's called The Ballad of Joanna Lumley and the Garden Bridge.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
All right, thank you, Harry Harris. We've officially written a song together. We are now a group.
We are.
Yay. Thanks, Harry.
That's all right.
If you like the sound of Harry's music, and why the hell wouldn't you? You can find him on most streaming platforms.
All of them,
Harry,
I think.
Harry Harris.
Yeah, yeah, all of them. They're all there.
Or if you like the sound of us all together, you can have me and Harry on the Atta Girls EP, which is available on Bandcamp.
Yeah, it's yeahgreyhound.bandcamp.com.
Well, that's it for another tone-deaf episode of The School for Dumb Women. We would like to formally apologise for all the singing involved, and to Joanna Lumley and the Garden Bridge.
I wanna be a garden bridge!
Thanks to Harry Harris for coming in real life, and also for doing our jingles, as per. Thanks also to Gavin Day for our logo and Soho Radio Studios for the recording space.
We're actually taking a short break next week, but you'll have our special bonus episode with Harry Harris to keep you company while we're away. We'll be back with a regular-sized episode the week after.
See you then! And a one, and a two, and a three.
Goodbye!
As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, me and Harry do have a band together. We're called Greyhounds, Greyhounds, Greyhounds. We do have an EP out right now. It's completely free unless you want to donate. It's on yeahgreyhounds.bandcamp.com. And here is the title track from the EP called Atta Girls.
I will not toss my wedding ring into a melting pot. I will not raise three children in one room. I refuse to be grateful for all that I've got, cause I've got a spitfire in me and a Sykes knife in my heart. Oh, go down, kicking and screaming, your beard's covered and bleeding. Atta girls, atta girls, atta girls, atta girls, atta girls, atta girls. Go down, fucking and fighting, can't you see, man, I'm working. Atta girls, atta girls, atta girls, atta girls, atta girls, atta girls.
I've been tuning up this griffin that's been cursing back at me. It's been snarling like dogs fighting for a bone. But the balloons above Southampton were a target for the sea, until the props were taken over and we were high above the sea.
Once again, you can listen to or download the Atta Girls EP from yeahgreyhounds.bandcamp.com. This is the last time I will ever plug this. Thank you.
Can't you see, man, I'm working. Atta Girls, Atta Girls, Atta Girls, Atta Girls, Atta Girls.
Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
And I'm Anton.
We are two of the three co-hosts of a podcast called Juvenalia. Our third co-host, Sarah Marie Griffin, is not here. Juvenalia is a podcast where we talk to an interesting person about a piece of pop culture that they were obsessed with when they were a child. So if you want to hear Sarah from Tegan and Sarah talking about Madonna's Future of the Earth tour,
or hear about Maria Joelle Kennedy and why her favourite film is The Wizard of Oz,
or hear Caroline O'Donoghue talking about Frasier, then subscribe to us on any podcast app you might be listening to right now. Okay, that's the ad. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.